is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Like it with Chicago Lang is brought to you in part by Cable Bahamas, World Star Assurance, Burger King, and Royal Fidelity.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. I didn't want to rehash this vaccine thing today, but I am in a little while going to talk about the message coming out of the World Health Organization in PAHO, explaining that they've now sent out the first shipment of the COVAX vaccine. And we're going to look at what they say and then figure out, because I heard a lady early this morning on my way. I was dropping the kids to school, and I heard a lady on Dwight's show with PAHO, the PAHO representative. I don't have her name right now on me. But I heard her saying when they will come with that to Parliament. To the Bahamas, right? So late March, early April. I guess you could nitpick on, oh, it was mid-March or late March, and now it's early April. I don't know what a difference a few days will make. And the balance of the 100,000 should be here by May. So I think that's pretty solid. But before we get into that, let's, and also want to make a comment about these other European countries, because we're looking at these European countries and go, well, they're banning it, and that is true. But again, they have options too, and we have few at this point, unless the unless the private sector gets involved and can source some things better. But as I said, before I get into all of that, let me say this. I don't, and I was listening to the House of Assembly yesterday when it started. Let me back up. When I left home today, I was listening to Levin's show. All right, when I left, I went, came back from the gym, did my thing, left home to come here. I was listening to the Levin show, then I listened to the news, and then I turned it to Wendell Jones' station to see what he was talking about. And interestingly, he was talking about the speaker, and Anton, I heard you on Wendell Jones. You don't have to call and reiterate what you said on Wendell Jones' show on this show about the speaker. I heard you, okay? And whoever listens to Wendell Jones' show, including me, heard you. You don't have to call and say it here. So I was listening to Wendell Jones' show, and he's talking about democracy in general. He started talking about the speaker. And coincidentally, I had wanted to talk about the speaker today as well. Not only for what he said at the head of Parliament yesterday, but also I'm struggling to wrap my mind around what goes on in Halston Mutrie's head. As a serious clinical examination of what actually makes him tick, all right? Because he ain't making no sense, right? In so many things. So I listened to him yesterday, and he talks about how the lack of parliamentary oversight has led to escalating levels of debt in the country. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Okay? None whatsoever. Every dollar, and mind you, I got a problem with the debt too. He said the lack of parliamentary oversight of the executive, like he seems very murky on how the Constitution of the Bahamas works. The lack of parliamentary oversight by the executive has led from our debt going to, what is it, 500 million to 10 billion, right? That's through a lack of parliamentary oversight. And when I hear these things, I really want to pull whatever hair I have out of my head because it doesn't make any sense. How could a lack of parliamentary oversight lead to escalating levels of debt when every dollar that is borrowed by the government on behalf of the Bahamian people has to be approved by Parliament? How could a lack of parliamentary oversight lead to escalating debt? It is only through Parliament that the debt escalates. He doesn't make any sense. Then he says, and this wasn't the only crazy thing, and he doubled down on the crazy last night. I was going to let it go. And then last night, when Peter Turnquest pulled whatever he pulled, I was like, well, let me go back to it. Because we have to understand better in this country how things work, all right? And if you're the Speaker of the House of Assembly, I would dare say that you should be the chief person who understands how the Constitution and Parliament works. So, Moutrie, who's having a beef with the Attorney General's office, and who clearly is using his seat as Speaker to make his mark known in the short time he has left as Speaker of the House of Assembly, says so many strange and inappropriate things, right? So, Moutrie says that bloated cabinets have led to the executive steamrolling Parliament. Again, even though you're right in that cabinets are bloated, it doesn't come before you at all to dictate who is in cabinet. The Constitution is quite clear on that. If Minnis or Ingram or Christie want to put everybody on the governing side in cabinet, they could do that. All right? The Constitution is quite clear. You are to have at least no fewer than 8 members of cabinet. The Attorney General can come from either an elected member of the House of Assembly or the Senate. If the Attorney General is in the Senate, then you can have no more than 2 senators other than the Attorney General be in cabinet. All right? Other than that, there are no constraints. That is how our Constitution is designed. For the executive to choose who is in cabinet and how many people are in cabinet. It has nothing to do with you. Nothing. This has been a long-standing practice. Ingram had one of the largest cabinets in history. Then Christie came, and his was larger, and Minnis's is close to what Christie's was. All right, I think Ingram was the first time they eclipsed 20, if I'm remembering this correctly. All right, Ingram gave his reasons for it. Christie then called it a Gussie Mae cabinet. Then Christie came back, did the same thing. He gave his reasons for it, which were much the same as Ingram's. Minnis ain't give nobody no reason, just did what he had to do, right? So it doesn't come before you ever to talk about what size the cabinet should be. That's the prerogative of the executive, not yours at all. Then he says, because the Secretary of Cabinet, who he's aired his beef with out on the floor of the House, then he says that the Speaker of the Cabinet wrote a letter saying that they want to coordinate on what the agenda of Parliament should be. He says, under no circumstances should the executive, the Cabinet, set the agenda of Parliament. Well, then who the hell is supposed to set it? You? Are you supposed to decide what bills are debated today? Are you supposed to decide what comes on the floor of the House? Parliament is designed by its rules and by the Constitution so that the executive pushes forward legislation for the peace, order, and good governance of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Not you. You don't get to dictate what we can debate today, what we can talk about today. It doesn't work that way. You got to get yourself together, man. How does the executive not dictate the agenda of Parliament? In what world? In which Parliament? What are you suggesting? That you tell them what they can debate today? That you tell them what can come today? That you could set the rules for everything? That is not your function. Then, this is just the morning, he drifts off into the Attorney General's office talking about the clerk, which, fine. Carl Bethel handles these things sloppily at times, and he shouldn't blame the clerk, like Renwood Wells shouldn't have blamed the clerk for allowing McElpine to table that repealing of the Ocean Key Bill. Right? So, fine. But then he goes and says that the members of Parliament who don't want to run again should stand with him and strike a blow for democracy. Let me quote him. He says, there are a number of members of this Parliament who have indicated that they're not going to be seeking re-election. They include the member of St. Anne's, the member for East Grand Bahama, the member for Mangrove Key, the member for South and Central Andros, which they're the same person as far as I'm aware, and the member for Garden Hills. Today, I call on those members to throw a blow for democracy, for tough parliamentary democracy, by supporting the initiative for the independence of this Parliament. What initiative are you talking about? Are you talking about your blathering? From the Speaker's chair, is that the initiative? I'm sorry, is there some bill that exists that would make Parliament more independent? The bill that you drafted, that you're salty, that the executive won't bring to Parliament? That's right, the executive gets to decide which bills they bring to Parliament. I guess what you want is you want to decide how the executive functions, you who claim independence, and dictate to the executive that they must bring your bill that he claims would make Parliament more independent to the floor of the House of Assembly. They don't got to bring nothing. They don't want to bring. They don't got to debate nothing. They don't want to debate. They don't got to draft nothing. They don't want to draft. It's so bizarre. And then Brent Simonet gets up and freaks out on him, right? And rightly so. Because Alison Moutrie didn't send anybody to Parliament. The people of these constituencies sent these people to Parliament. And it is on them and what the people of the constituencies want to decide their positions in Parliament. Stand with you on a bill that they probably haven't even read? On a bill that we are not sure of the contents of? Most of them have not read it. So it was all patently ridiculous. And Renwood Wells was going back and forth with him too. And he's not making any sense. Fast forward to yesterday afternoon. Rhys Chipman brings up, and here's what we're not going to do, right? We're not going to get up in Parliament and act like we didn't say something when everybody heard you say it and it was recording. We recorded you say it and then get up and say, well, I didn't say that. So Peter Turnquest, who again, I like, but Turnquest, you got to tighten up here, brother. So, Peter Turnquest says, Rhys Chipman reminds Turnquest that he blasted the response to Hurricane Dorian as a national embarrassment, which is exactly what he did. Peter Turnquest gets up and says that That's not what he said. That the reporter, I hate when politicians do this. The reporter selectively quoted him. Nobody selectively quoted you at all. We said exactly what you said. So I'm going to say to you what you said. All right? I'm going to say to you what the report said, and then I'm going to say to you what is in your written remarks that you released, that you said on the floor of the House of Assembly. This is the story. Turnquest slams Dorian recovery efforts. And Chipman then need to prepare a little better, because what happens is these guys get up and say, oh, I didn't say that. And then Chipman had to go get the actual remarks and read it to him. And after that, he conceded. But let me explain to you what happened first. So this is the story. Turnquest slams Dorian recovery efforts. More than a year and a half after Hurricane Dorian laid waste to parts of Abaco and Grand Bahama, East Grand Bahama MP Peter Turnquest said last night that it is a national embarrassment that many of his constituents still have to sleep in camping tents exposed to the elements and insects while 40 domes sit in containers in High Rock. Now, I heard Peter Turnquest say this. I heard him talk about the response to Dorian. I watched his entire presentation, again, for 4.5 hours almost. How could you say you didn't say it? Here's exactly what he said. Mr. Speaker, temporary dome homes intended to provide immediate relief remain in trailers on the High Rock Community Park on Grand Bahama. 20 container homes donated by the MSC Foundation, and I see them in the book, the annual report by the DRA, are damaged and strewn around Sweeting's Key, is nothing less than what I consider a national embarrassment. I'm sorry, I call it like it is, not to offend anybody. These are the facts. That's exactly what you said. So here's what happened. Reese Chipman gets the article, gives it to Moultrie. Moultrie says that the first line, the lead of this story, is the reporter's opinion. I'll read it to you again, Moultrie, since you clearly have an issue with understanding what factual reporting is. This is attributing Peter Turnquest. More than a year and a half after Hurricane Dorian laid waste to parts of Abaco and Grand Bahama, East Grand Bahama MP Peter Turnquest said last night, it's a national embarrassment. Many of his constituents left to sleep in camping tents exposed to the element and insects while 40 domes sit in containers in High Rock. Turnquest said, 20 container homes donated by the MSC Foundation, and I see them in the book, the annual report by the DRA, are damaged and strewn around Sweeting's Key, is nothing less than what I consider a national embarrassment. I'm sorry, I call it like it is. That's what he said. He went on to say, there has to be some urgency in resolving this matter. Quote, we're talking about people who live in tents for God's sake. Camping tents. A year and a half after the storm, when we have dome homes, which you could debate whether we should have built them or not, but we have dome homes sitting in a container, 40 of them. How do you justify that? How do I hold my head up in front of my constituents as a responsible, caring person and say to them, my brother, my sister, we have the dome homes, but we can't afford $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever it is to construct you one. So you're going to have to live in that tent. I'm so sorry. I say to my colleagues, because I'm embarrassed by this, we need to deal with this matter. All right? So don't get up and say you didn't say what you said. Whatever you said, be prepared to live by that. But more so than Turnquest, how does the Speaker of the House of Assembly sit here and look at a newspaper, or sit there, look at a newspaper report and go, it's the writer's opinion, when you haven't even bothered to read the article to see which parts were attributed to the member of parliament? Like, this is, I've never seen anything like this in my life. Right? You're using the speaker's chair to push your own personal agenda. I've never, ever seen a Speaker of the House of Assembly do it. I ain't seen all, right? I heard it with some wives with Ali Butler, but I've never, ever seen this as long as I've been looking at watching the House of Assembly. All right? And I've been watching the House of Assembly intermittently since Ingram had it televised. And, like a hawk since I started working in media. All right, so we got to do better than this as a nation. We have to understand how our Constitution works, and we have to understand what it is that we're seeking to get at. All right. We want a functional democracy, yes. We want a more representative democracy, yes. But the fact that cabinet controls the legislative agenda of parliament is normal and routine and what the Constitution expects. The fact that the prime minister has the prerogative to put as many people as he wants in his cabinet, which does make it so that the executive steamrolls the legislative agenda, is what the Constitution provides for. And until there's some sort of referendum on that or a change on that, I'd actually have to look and see if that's entrenched. But until we change that, it is what it is. And just because you're salty that no one's bringing your bill to the floor, you say your bill's been in committee for or been in the consultation stage for over a year. So what, right? You have the Nationality, Immigration, and Asylum Bill that's been in the consultation stage for over 2 years. And that, in my estimation, is far, far, far more important than you controlling how much your assistant gets paid or having to ask the Secretary of Cabinet for funding. Now, these things are the way they are because of Pinling and his issues with the Speaker back in the early 80s. And they decided, you know what? In case one of y'all go rogue, what we're going to do is make sure that we have the ability to control the executive has the ability to control our legislative agenda and make sure that we're able to execute it. And to me, there's nothing wrong with the prime minister doing that. Clearly, Ingram didn't see anything wrong with it. He didn't change it. Clearly, Christie didn't see anything wrong with it. He didn't change it. Minnis clearly didn't see anything wrong with it. He hasn't changed it. All right? I find this all very bizarre. See who that is. If that's Anton, then, you know, don't. But you can call it 323-6232, 323-6232. 325-4316, 325-4316, and 325-4259, 325-4259. You know, and Peter Nergwest, don't come back after you stood up and said it was a national embarrassment and claimed that you didn't mean it and it wasn't you and all this. That's you stand up for your constituents. Stand by that. It is a national embarrassment that they don't have $200,000 to build dome homes on Sweetings Key. All right. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hi, my brother.
How's it going?
You know, Anton, it's like, you know, you don't say his name one or two.
Some of them, eh? Like Candyman.
But, yeah, I mean, the House Speaker is throwing the biggest petty fest I've seen in the history of petty fest.
Yeah, man.
I think he needs to be adult about the situation and realize that he can't run that House the way that he feels that he should be running that House.
And he's just mad because he ain't getting a nomination, you know.
Yep, that's it. I mean, hey, kudos to him. No, I mean, riding until the wheels fall off, but it just making it look bad on his part, right? He's not being a dog in the situation.
It doesn't make any sense. Let's get on with the business of the House. Every time the House starts, we got to hear a diatribe from him. I understand if you want to protect the clerk, because Carl Bethel and Kwesi Thompson were sloppy with it, and they're trying to throw David Forbes under the bus. But all this other stuff you going on with, but you call on the MPs to stand up and what are you talking about?
It's like, you know, it's like
he support you.
He has a problem with the government, but he wants government MPs to support him.
Exactly.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
None.
Man. It doesn't make no sense whatsoever. And what he needs to do is do the right thing and resign. That's the right thing to do for our constitution. Resign. Because obviously you
just leave.
You want to push your agenda. Resign and ride into the sunset.
Like, what's supposed to happen? Like, Picewell's supposed to bring the bill. And, I mean, you could consider that bill a money bill because it controls who spends what. Picewell's supposed to bring the bill. You're going to allow it. Brent Simonette's supposed to second it. Rand Woodrow's them will never, ever, ever debate it. Like, what do you expect to happen? I don't get it.
That's going to waste more of the public time, to be honest. Right? That's all that's going to happen. Ride into the sunset. Do the honorable thing and ride into the sunset.
Just resign. You know you ain't going. Let Don Saunders be the speaker and let that ride. But that $80,000 hit different.
Boy, that's not so far.
The driver and the $80,000 salary. When you don't have that, life hit a little different, right?
Agreed.
Yeah, it's crazy. I really don't understand what's going on. All right. Thanks, my brother. Let's do another call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey there, Vaughn. How you doing?
Hey, good. How's it going?
Everything good, man. You know that all of the members of Parliament uses the House of Assembly to push their whatever they want to do, and they have no backlash from it because that's where they have their privilege.
Right.
So when they get up inside there and lambaste families like the former disgraced Deputy Prime Minister of the FNM, Peter Sengler, when he did that lambaste of the whole family, and then all them bang on the desk laugh, ha, ha, ha. And they go in there to do this. That's what they do. You understand? So that's a little bit of power they got, but guess what? Time is up, you know.
Yes, you think it's up. you think that went over?
That one, guess what? They gone. They ain't got away, but that, let them suck up another speaker. The last of it, $80,000 you get for the year. Of course, election coming fast as you think. You see writing on the wall, man. Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles can see writing on the wall.
Man, the BMC, they getting 39 seats, my brother. So
39 seats, yeah. But if I tell him that Marco Polo, that voodoo, what he got waking, tell him that go on the garbage, eh? Tell him that voodoo dead. Tell him that he might as well go get his money back. Now what that witch doctor, that one finished.
He got to go see the Obama.
That one done. All right. Stop walking him.
All right, my brother. Appreciate you. Anyway, let me leave that alone. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Afternoon, my guy, Nick.
How's it going, man?
I'm great, man. You know, $80,000 is a lot of money to really, let go, you know.
Walk away from, right.
Okay, and also to, let's say he was to resign. After I've studied him for the past 4 years, I think he will resign his seat. Would that call for a by-election?
Yes.
Okay, and do you think the government would then decide to bring a general election?
Yeah, I think rather than have a by-election in Nassau Village, the Prime Minister would call the general election.
Okay, and also to the monies that goes into the constituency, which I think is 100,000, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. It seems as if, as a voter, it seems as if it's all for that money, man, you know, and then here it is. He, like you say, he wants just more power, you know. After 4 years, power seems to be hunger for him and this government that has got the first 5 years, and now they're hungry for five more. Power is an issue. Thanks for letting me share, man.
Sure, man. Well, power's seductive, but I'll explain it to you like this. He wants the powers that the prime minister has, and you just don't. Right? You're just not on equal footing with the prime minister and his ability to control a legislative agenda. You're just not. Even though there are three co-equal branches of government, right, that provide checks and balances, the prime minister ultimately is the one who the Constitution vests this power in, right? You don't go see the governor general after the election to go get sworn in. You're not called on to form a government. The prime minister is. So don't get confused about who wields power here. It is the prime minister and the cabinet of the Bahamas that ultimately wields the power. Now, you are supposed to make sure that parliament is conducted according to the rules. You should protect the minority. You should make sure that the opposition is allowed to have their say and that people don't flaunt the rules. But you have a specific set of circumstances under which you're allowed to operate, and that's that. Right? Other than that, the prime minister and the cabinet gets to set the agenda. And I don't agree with a lot of things ministers have done. But you can't take that from them because you salty that you have to coordinate with the secretary of cabinet. Why not? Wouldn't that make for better governance, that the secretary of the cabinet coordinates what is ready for cabinet to come to bring to parliament with you so that you could be clear on what's happening? I think that's just a courtesy. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Yes, good afternoon, Juan. How goes it?
I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, I think it is about the power because I can't see a doctor who could probably do a heart surgery for about $300,000 going to get a job for $25,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that one. But the speaker, he's trying to, I don't know, but he mentioned something about this system that we are in that actually caused us to have a $500 million deficit or debt, and now it's $9 billion under the same system. Is he blaming this group of persons who have been managing us for the past 50 years for that, and he sees there's a possibility for that to change if they would just reconstruct the radio business?
He thinks that, well, in his mind, right, and I'm trying to figure out how it works in his mind. If there were greater parliamentary oversight, we wouldn't have as much debt. Says who? Who can stop the Parliament of the Bahamas from voting to borrow money? Only the Parliament of the Bahamas. So who's supposed to oversee the Parliament of the Bahamas other than the Parliament of the Bahamas? Now, you could understand better how our money is being spent if you have good parliamentary oversight, which is on you because you waited over 3 years to go change the rules of the Public Accounts Committee. But who other than Parliament has overseen this borrowing that he imagines could stop it other than Parliament?
I like the way you bring clarity, Juan. Thanks.
Okay. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah, yes, the debt is high. I understand that. But how is a lack of parliamentary oversight to blame when it is Parliament who's supposed to stop Parliament from borrowing money, right? Who's supposed to stop Parliament from running deficits? Who can do that other than the Parliament? So, for instance, there's a Fiscal Responsibility Act that they passed, right? And the Fiscal Responsibility Act says you have to have a certain level of deficit spending, and you cannot exceed it, except if Parliament says you can. So in every bill to do with spending, borrowing, Parliament builds itself a way out because you don't know what's going to happen. If a Dorian happened, you go, no, well, you can't do it. How soon can we borrow this money to go not rebuild the homes in Sweden? No, you can't. It doesn't make any sense. And in fact, Parliament builds in to its own laws, like the Public Finance Management Bill, that there are times when you can borrow money or spend money without going through Parliament, but you ultimately have to come back to Parliament. So only Parliament you could borrow money. Only Parliament ultimately can you spend this money. Which, I was looking at the disaster recovery thing Chester Cooper was talking about. I got questions about that too. All right, this is Hi, Juan. I'm surprised you've not gone mad by now. I didn't even mean to talk about this long, but I'm trying to figure out what's really going on. Hi, Juan. I'm surprised you've not gone mad by now. I don't live in the Bahamas, and I'm still frustrated by the going-ons of your country. It's sheer madness. It says, never a dull moment, Juan. LOL, the speaker is not well-versed on the Constitution of the Bahamas, and this is why they need not appoint dummies to collect these large salaries. Salty is correct. All right, we got to go to a break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In life, there are always challenges. Today, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we are committed to our customers by providing cost-effective insurance solutions. No matter what your insurance needs, we will always be here for you. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Everyone should experience a brand new car, but not everyone can afford one. Until now, Bahamas Bus and Truck has the answer. The stylish, spacious, feature-rich, yet affordable Mitsubishi Attrage. Priced at $21,900, including a 3-year warranty, why not come and experience the value that Mitsubishi has built into the Attrage today? Bahamas Bus and Truck, the country's only authorized Mitsubishi dealer. Telephone 322-1722.
Looking for plenty food and you're on a budget?
Wait, I'm break.
Stop into Wendy's and grab our latest bundle. Introducing the Biggie Bag. With the new Biggie Bag, you get a Dave's Singles, Junior Fries, regular drink, and four-piece nuggets for only $7.25, fat inclusive. Add an apple pie for just $1 more. Now that's a deal.
What on? Also hook up, eh?
It's the best on these streets. Available at all locations. Restrictions apply. Wendy's, different inside and out.
Hello, sir. Your credit card bill is due. Hello, sir. It's time for your monthly loan payment. Tired of creditors pounding at your door? Sign up for a debt consolidation loan from Fidelity Bank and consolidate your debt into one low monthly payment. What's more, you'll also earn interest on a built-in savings account. The pandemic has curbed many freedoms, but at Fidelity, our focus is to help regain your financial freedom. Visit a branch or speak to a Fidelity Bank at 356-7764. COVID safety measures in place at all branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9. We were talking more than I want to, but we were already talking about it. Speaker of the House of Assembly, like yet again, you ain't no celebrity. What you clout chasing after? We don't need to be hearing from you all the time. Like, make your remarks and make sure Parliament functions. We need to hear everything about you. We done heard all about your Indigenous Bahamian wife and all this. We ain't sign up for all that. You know what I mean? We vote for you for Nassau Village. That's about it. You know what I mean? PM don't put you in cabinet. That's on him. It's also on him for putting you there in the first place. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Yeah, good afternoon. Juan, how are you doing?
Hey, Anton. How's it going?
Okay. What was those two characters when you say you call the name twice? Oh, you didn't say cat name man twice, man. You only said it once.
Right. Go ahead.
But anyway, for you or the other caller, Juan. Mm-hmm. Look, man. The only people salty right now in the parliament are FNMs and their supporters around the country. Because over the last almost 4 years, when the Honorable Speaker of the House of Assembly, the Honorable Halton Moot, was siding with this lousy, incompetent, failed Prime Minister, Minister-led FNM government with everything, they had nothing to say, nothing but good things to say. They were all on his side. They thought he was the best speaker since sliced bread was created. Now, all of a sudden, since he's the only one on their side speaking publicly, besides Freddie Mac, he's the only one on their side seeking to bring about some level or semblance of transparency and accountability, right? Now, all of a sudden, he's the worst speaker of the house. Y'all lousy, losing, unreasonable, bad-minded FNMs, get lost. Get out of here, because ain't nobody on y'all run. Y'all will be voted out of office shortly. I want one more point. I have one more point I'd like to make, one.
Okay.
Okay. Look here. Yesterday, one, mm-hmm. I thought the heavens had come down and touched earth when I heard the president of The Guardian, Ancolino, mm-hmm. Mr. Anthony Ferguson, fully endorse the economic plan of the Progressive Liberal Party on Chicago Line Show, which I participated in that conversation. Mr. Ferguson said he looked around, and the only plan that he has trust in that will bring the relief to the Bahamian people and that has the strategies in place to lift our economy to where it needs to be recognizing a growth of between 5 to 7% annually, is the economic plan revealed by the leader of the Progressive Liberal Party and the leader of the official opposition, the Honorable Philip Brave Davis, who will be the next prime minister in this country, and our deputy, who will be the next deputy prime minister, our brilliant economist, our brilliant businessman, and our extremely wise leader. That's the only plan that he had faith in right now that he sees is in circulation. And I just give him thanks for his honesty. And I encourage him to continue to speak openly, whether it be positive or negative to the PLP or positive or negative to this current lousy, failed, minister-led FNM government. Thank you for the opportunity. Continue the great work.
All right, my brother. Yeah, I heard a lot of Anthony Ferguson on Chicago Lang's show, and I trust his opinion highly. And if you know Atwell, first of all, he's not the president of The Guardian. He was the publisher and he stepped away and he remains one of the owners of The Guardian. But if you know Anthony Ferguson, he doesn't chase no politics like that. They chase him. So, and I wasn't shocked in terms of some of the things he said that he could get behind the plan, but it's to me, in terms of him going, hey, I'll endorse something this political party's coming with, that one. I was like, oh, okay, interesting. But again, with him, I agree with some of the things in the PLP's plan. I'm not saying I endorse the whole thing, but I definitely think some of the things are workable if they can work it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Well, it is in the university alone.
Hey, brother.
One, I wish you would entertain me for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this boy, sometimes he makes me sick. The PLP, right? yeah. And, of course, Colorado, right? He allowed that some people to squat on some properties belongs to me. Perry Christie sent the police to me to show him where the property, one of the property were, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the police came, right? But to make it simple, he always talking about the lousy F&M, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why he don't get the PLP to fix this problem where they got me and can't hardly get my property and got a lawyer, got me hang up for so many years trying to get my property sorted out.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they could make that. Who's running for the PLP? Jomo Campbell in Centerville. Have you seen him yet? Hello? No? Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Yes, sir. What I want to say, right, about the 2LZ plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
The 2LZ plan is very conservative. It's not subjective.
Mm-hmm.
It's for one. That makes it a progressive plan. I mean, there's a physical infrastructure, right? It has no single-payer health care, like there is in the UK, perhaps in Canada. So, you know, Antoine talking about this clean insurance guy talking about this plan, you know, and the question was asked to him, what in this plan was cared for employing the youth or giving the youth some hope. He talked about the blue economy, the green economy. He didn't even talk about the orange economy, and he couldn't give no specific plan. Plan that would help these youths. You know, he further going to talk about housing, how housing could bring money to the economy. How long have we been doing housing, Mr. McCartney?
You don't agree with housing could stimulate the economy?
No, but how long? That's not a new plan. How long have we been doing it, and we always fail with it? You know, it's a plan where there's no property in Nassau. You know, it's a plan where you pass a partnership with the banks for these mortgages. You know, these mortgages, just like the slave mortgages, you know, slaves, the people pay their mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? They have slave wages. You know, the PLP talk about this phase in livable wage without a timetable, starting at 250. Come on now, 250 is under poverty already. Come on, man, that's what's progressive in that. They're supposed to be the progressive Liberal Party. What's progressive in that? You know, they got a constitution that's not liberal.
Yeah.
Constitution that's conservative. You talk about the powers of the executive. Come on, man, that's a filling board of cabinet that allow them to create a government cabinet to take away the powers of the constituents, the legislator. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, they can't take away the powers of the legislature, but they can certainly get their way and make the parliament, render the parliament ineffectual in terms of individual representation of constituencies. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Good afternoon. Are you there? Nope, okay. Not the problem. We'll just do some text messages before we go to the news break. But I'm glad he brought up what he doesn't deem as conservative or progressive enough policies in their plan, particularly with taxation. I want to talk some about that. Let's see. Good morning, Juan. When this administration wanted to open the economy, we see the COVID numbers gone down. Now they want to enforce the vaccines. We see the numbers rising. Ray Charles can see what's going on. Okay. It says, good day, sir. This may be off topic, but please answer this question. Is there anywhere in the Constitution that gives the Prime Minister the power not to call elections or postpone the election? Does he have the power to stay on as Prime Minister after the time limit expires? He can, actually. Depending on if we're at war, he can delay an election. I believe it's for up to 2 years, but you actually got to be at war. And he has 60 days after he dissolves the House of Assembly to have the writs of election, after the writs of election are issued, have them returned. So he's got some wiggle room, but not indefinite. Now, the question is, I think Lang did the exercise, is what if he just refuses to step down? I don't think that would happen, but that's, I don't know that the Constitution answers that. They just have these tenets where you just assume people will act honorably, right? And so we saw with Donald Trump where that got them. So sometimes you got to build stuff in just in case somebody go off the rails. It says, not sorry for the FNM. They voted for him twice, saying that they have full confidence in this speaker. So what are they crying for now? Boy, came back to him. Hey, Juan, that caller is just like Anton. He's just smooth with it. Juan, this is a hot topic today. You know, Anton will change his voice to get on. He may mimic a female to throw his blow. This is for all the brown nosing Anton does. I hope he ends up straight, because he's ridiculous. But on a serious note, these political hacks and propaganda machinists need to stop looking to politics and the taxpayers' purse to feed them and stand on their own 2 feet in the real world. This is Juan. The speaker's a bitter, selfish man. His concern is for running water and sink for his office. Where's the concern for the people of Nassau Village who has no running water or sink in their homes? He's worried about his bill that's hung up in committee. What about the freedom of information that's been held up for years? There's no justice. It's just us, Jogi leaders. I don't know what y'all want. He give y'all the sump pump, the hand pump. I don't know what the problem is. Y'all be asking for running water in y'all house and all this. We got to go to a break for news. We'll be back.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Yula gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with a loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
You asked for it, and now it's here. Introducing the all-new plant-based Rebel Whopper only at Burger King Nassau. The new Rebel Whopper is everything you expect in a Whopper with a meatless plant-based patty that is flame-grilled to perfection with all the fixings you love on that famous sesame seed bun. Come try out the new Rebel Whopper with fries and a Pepsi and see if you can tell the difference. The Rebel Whopper is 100% Whopper, 0% beef, and only at Burger King Nassau. Where taste is king.
At Bahamas Bus and Truck Company Limited, we provide vehicles known for quality and durability. From the iconic Jeep Wrangler to the award-winning Grand Cherokee, we've got your everyday driver covered. For larger tasks, our Ram 1500, Mitsubishi Fuso Canter Trucks, CMC Verica Vans, and Fuso Rosa Jitneys do way more than just deliver. We even carry a wide variety of pre-owned vehicles. To keep you going, our parts, service department, and body shop can accommodate our brands and others. Call us today at 322-1722 or email info@bahamasbus.com.
Think safety first. Get to know LA Impact Windows and Doors. For the lowest and affordable quality hurricane impact windows and doors, garage doors, showers, shutters, casement and sliding windows and doors for residential and commercial business, installation, glass and roll-up shutter repairs, special discounts for contractors and senior citizens, easy layaway plans too. Feel safe with LA Impact Windows and Doors, located in the Southland Plaza, East Street South, just 3 doors north of the Teachers Credit Union offices. LA Impact Windows and Doors, impacting your view. Phone 322-3667.
Afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome back to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We're going to be, I'll finish reading your text about, we're talking about House of Mutri, but I also wanted to introduce this topic on tax reform so we can have an idea of how we move forward on this issue. But let me just get through some of your text here. All right. I read that one. It says, hey, Juan, indigenous wife, LOL, what a joke. I go read that next part. It says, Juan, I realize your show is very informative, but Anton definitely adds a good comedy minute to it. It says, Juan, do we fire Kermit for letting Beetlejuice get through? It's on you, Kirby. Slipping. This says, good afternoon, Juan. Did that previous caller say voodoo doctor in regards to the PM? But ain't it the leader of the opposition who represents the alleged voodoo capital of the Bahamas? I hope Brave is in the kitchen working because he'll need as much help as he can get. We may be fed up with the PM, but we're just as much fed up with Brave. No cakewalking going on here anymore. I'm a do. I wanted to do a show on Obel too. But I don't want to, like, really deal with too many OBEA practitioners. So I kind of was just going to do it, like, theoretically. I don't want you actually, if you practice OBEA, don't come. It's true. I know that's Voodoo and it's African. So I met a gentleman downtown several years ago. And he published a book. I'll bring it one day. I'll read some of it to you so that you too can get the creeps. He published a book, and it's called Ghost Stories of Cat Island. All right? It's a local guy, older guy. I don't even know if he's still around. He published a book, and he was selling it for $10 downtown. I was like, well, let me see, you know, and I bought it, and I took it home, and I was reading it. And it definitely had some really eerie stuff in there. Like, so for instance, you, like, horror movies don't scare me, right? Because, and my wife, like, likes horror movies, and then she always gets scared of the horror movies. She's like, you're not scared? I was like, well, it's a dude in a costume, and there's a camera and a camera crew all behind him, So I know it's just all make-believe. It's on a set, right? None of it's real. Like they, you know. Although, you ever watch The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix? I highly recommend it. And there's a follow-up called The Haunting of Bly Manor, which The Haunting of Bly Manor has an episode that's an hour long called Lady of the Lake. It's all black and white. And it's one of the eeriest, creepiest things I've ever seen, knowing full well that it's just a television production. It's still like will send a shiver down your spine. How well done it is. But I'm going to read the ghost stories of Cat Island for you sometime. The way he wrote it, it sounded like it was something lived, like experienced, you know what I mean? Didn't sound like, oh, I heard it. It says, I just made up my mind not to vote for the PLP. Thanks, Anton. And it says, Mutri is his own hero. And he has a right and justified into his own dated beliefs. Yeah, he could believe what he wants. It says, Anton has certainly taken the PLP vaccine. It has taken him over, and he certainly has the yellow fever. I pray the FNM wins to keep him out of office. It says, would the emergency order be a thing that could delay elections as well? No, not from my reading of the Constitution, but we could do that exercise one day, bring the Constitution out and try to game theory it out to see how an emergency order could possibly delay an election. But as far as I'm aware, only war can delay the election. It says, is Anton the official spokesman for the PLP? I think it's very disrespectful for anyone to talk about the PM in such a manner. What do you call him, lousy? I mean, that's fair game. It says, go, Halle, go, Halle Mutri. Juan, are you the PLP's national economic plan? When your national debt is $9 billion plus, your annual budget deficit is $500 million plus, and your sovereign debt is a junk bond status, to reduce your revenue via VAT reduction and balloon your deficit, borrowing and debt for political reasons is asinine. I cry shame on the PLP. I mean, I don't look at it like that. Now, here's my thing with the PLP's plan. Sure, VAT reduction, there's ways you could make that up. Raise minimum wage, sure, I support that. That could stir consumption, and we'll talk about some of these things. But there's a lot in there that they're committing to that costs money that they haven't explained how they're going to pay for that. So if we were back in 2019, if we're back in June 2019, and they introduced all this stuff, my question to them would still be, how are we going to pay for all this? Right? Even if they said they're going to raise VAT to 10%, I'll be like, how is we going to pay for this? Are they going to push back down to 10% in 2019? I would say, how do we pay for X, Y, Z? And I think that explanation should be forthcoming. And if you have a communication strategy, you could game it out. Again, 30 grand a month, I'm, you know, here for you. But I would try to have people understand, like, well, this is a longer-term thing we're phasing in, and this is the immediate relief part, and some of these things won't come immediately, but some of the things you've promised for immediate relief come with immediate expenses. So I don't cry shame on them. I just need to understand better what it is that they're talking about. It says, McCartney, I'm asking this because I'm still out of a job. I need a place to stay. I depend on the extension from NIB. Why the Prime Minister isn't mentioning anything about it? Oh, NIB has been extended until March 31st. Now, I don't know why they're going month to month. Really, I would just say that what I would do would be to extend it until June 30th. All right? Because really, you say, well, the economy's going to get back and people are going to get back to work. Well, you shouldn't be at work and collecting unemployment anyway, right? It says, on reduction in VAT, Germany reduced from 19 to 16%, and the economic impact was 0.2% for 6 months. So it should increase overall economic activity. I think so, too. I think reducing VAT will stir spur consumer spending. And we could talk about this in terms of the broader economic and tax reforms. But I think decreasing VAT and increasing the minimum wage does immediately buoy consumer spending and will help you offset the revenue and could push revenue up, actually, I believe. Now, you say, McCartney, those in upper income brackets, if they're not spending the 2% of VAT that they're now required to spend, the likelihood is their consumption in the domestic economy is maxed out. And therefore, we're going to lose that money. They're not putting that money back into the economy. So what you want to do is capture that money plus more money by targeting those people who have more money to pay into the economy. And look, you live here, you want the best for the Bahamas. If you can afford to pay more and you're getting value for in terms of services, ease of doing business, the overall prosperity of the country, the safety of the country, then you need to pay more. Do you need to get tapped out? No. But more? Yes. All right? Here's what the United Nations said about our tax system. We're talking about in terms of reaching our sustainable development goals, which we're supposed to be on track to do that in 2030. All right, you want to call? That's fine. I was going to make the point about the tax reform, but no problem. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Are you there? Nope. Okay. Not a problem. If you want to call, that's fine. So here's what the United Nations says. Because value-added tax, when we're talking tax, is a regressive tax structure, right? So the people at the bottom are paying just as much as the people at the top, which is regressive, right? Progressive tax means that it progressively increases as people earn more, make more, have more. They pay more, right? Which is equitable. But we have a regressive tax structure where the people on the bottom are paying the same tax as the people on the bottom, people in the middle, people are paying the same tax as the people at the very tippy top, right? And you're not capturing enough revenue in the country to really bring your country along at the pace you need, because you're taking the revenue from those who could least afford to spend it, all right, as well as those who could take that revenue and reinvest it in order to propel themselves into wealth. So, oh, okay, good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Juan. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay. You asking the right questions, you know. I wonder how people just get upset over Anton and call the station every day, right?
The everyday part, I don't mind. The length of the calls is the issue.
Well, he should know that's the concern, so he should address the concern. Say what you have to say, but make it short.
Right.
People know he's a BLP, and he's gonna say that's him. He's promoted to say what he says, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The right thinking, sensible behemoth behind the scene. You know, I don't think he could differ their mind, because persons would look at things and see it as it is. So to be upset over him saying what he says, it don't bother me, you know, because that's for him, and he will say regardless. He can call the station because he's promoted to say so. He's probably no doubt being paid to say what he has to say. So I kind of expect him to say what he says.
Yeah, I ain't tripping. Make your money. I ain't got time to analyze things
and see it for what it is, you know. So I'm not upset over what he has to say. That's all I call to say.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, I'm not upset with him either. Just the length of it's taxing, right? Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Nope. Okay, fine. All right, let me make my point. So we have a regressive taxation system, and what we need to do is have a progressive taxation system. And we're going to take a look at, if we have time, although I see y'all keep calling, how taxation works around the Caribbean. And it's not apples to apples, because they're not us and we're not them, but we are among the very last countries in the region to have to move even an inch on income tax, and it's going to have to change. And I think I understand how it can change. All right, we may not capture all the multimillionaires. We may not capture the billionaires, because they have people who are paid to make sure that they don't pay so much in taxes. But I think if I look at this, we can capture enough to get us where we want to be. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Let's put a pause on that for a moment and talk about where we are. All right. So the United Nations says that tax intake in the Bahamas is one of the lowest in the region. The UN contends that raising tax intake to the regional average could help the country finance projects that work towards satisfying our sustainable development goals. Sustainable development goal number 10 calls for reduced inequality. That, too, according to the UN, is being affected by government's continued use of regressive tax methods. All right? The economic recovery has said it will look at our system of taxation. That's a nebulous promise, but that's what it said. The UN report states that, quote, while the government has made a substantial effort to increase its spending, especially through the introduction of value-added tax in 2015, it is still hesitant to levy income tax, either corporate or personal. The argument is that not levying an income tax is part of the country's development strategy. But under the current circumstances, it seems untenable to maintain that position in the long run. Revenue increase from 12.8% of GDP in 2013 to 60.4% in 2018. A substantial increase, but still a long way off from the average for Latin America and the Caribbean, which stood at 23.9% in 2018. While the introduction of the value-added tax may have expanded the tax base, it did so in a highly regressive way, disadvantaging the poor and exacerbating existing inequalities. According to the UN, only a small percentage of the government's revenue is currently being used to get the country close to achieving the 2030 Sustainable Development Goals. All right? So opportunities to increase levels of private sector participation and introduce private sector technology and innovation for both economic and social value must continue to be explored to meet the financing gap. So we saw where we were with value-added tax in terms of what we had been collecting, all right? Where, if we reduce value-added tax, where do we get the rest of this money from? So I already told you in Juan's Bahamas, the first people we tax are foreigners, so there's ways to capture that. But let's then turn to a model of income tax that works for us that could actually capture some money. So in order to understand what kind of figures we're talking about, let's go to the Department of Statistics, which in released, I believe, sometime in 2019, the Household Income Survey and Report. All right? So let's do this, and let's understand what we're working with, and we're looking at 2019 numbers, what we're working with in terms of the money that we have to play with, all right? So well, let's take the call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Are you there?
Hey, Juan, what's up, man?
I'm good. How's it going?
All right. Look here.
Yes.
Watch this. You see that buddy? I'm done, right?
Yes.
You see, some of the FNM, staunch FNM callers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They never identify themselves. Now, buddy, that's who got the secular for you. That brother, come on. Everybody on this place. You understand that?
Okay.
Now, he, his voice, his opinion, and that's what you call it.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it, my brother. Let me do this. Hold off on the calls for me, please, for a moment, Kermit. Let's talk about where we are in terms of household income in the Bahamas. This is the Department of Statistics survey of New Providence, Grand Bahama, and Abaco in May 2019. Abaco will not be exactly the same. It may be much less right now, but we're just playing with 2019 numbers for the sake of this exercise. So throughout the Bahamas, all the households surveyed brought in an annual income of $5,034,900,000. The Department of Statistics says that there are 112,765 households in the Bahamas. In New Providence, that would have been 76,775 households with an annual household income of $3,506,625,000. Now, you're going to say to, I'm going to say to you, or you're going to say to me before you hear me explain it, that, well, McCartney, if you just go and slap a flat income tax on everybody, you're still being regressive because the other guys are paying a percentage of their income they can afford to part with, when the poor people are paying a percentage of their income they can't afford to part with. So hear me out. I'm not going to tax anyone who seriously can't afford to pay. So we start out with a number of $5,034,900,000. We're not going to capture all those households. Let's look at the breakdown. And this is why I wanted to pause on the call. So I want to explain this to you, although it may be a longer show necessary to do this. So you have 2,040 households a year making $0 to $5,000, which is just the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life. So you have, let's say if they all made $5,000, right? We're talking about people who are making less than, a household making less than $100 a week, all right? So that's certainly below the poverty level. Now, let's look at if we're talking about who all falls below the poverty level. So we're going to make sure that we don't capture anyone who lives in poverty. So the latest data we have on poverty, so to cull these numbers, is anyone making less than $5,000 a year, all right? Now, the latest data we have is that 40,000 people are making less than $5,000 a year. Now, if you are in a household making less than $5,000 a year, you are clearly living below the poverty level. If we look at, let's say there are two working members of your household and you are living under $10,000 a year as a household, then you are below the poverty level. So we are told that 11.1% of people in the Bahamas, or about 40, are living below the poverty level. So they can't afford to pay. We have 2,040 households making $0 to $5,000. We got 3,835 households making $5,000 to $10,000. So immediately we're going to take out of this equation 5,875 households. That's from our 112,765 households. So you see that number has dropped already. All right? Now, we have 7,205 households making $10,000 to $15,000 a year. All right? In my estimation, they're making $250 to $300 bucks a week. They can't afford to pay. So we now have 13,080 households that we're going to subtract from our total number already. All right? They can't afford the income tax. They're already paying the VAT and everything else, the customs, XYZ. $15,000 to $20,000. To me, you're not at the level where you should be paying income tax, because your income at this point, if you're making up to $20,000 as a household, is at a subsistence level. All right? I'm trying to be generous here. So that's another 8,630 people. So 13,080. All right, we're going to add 8,630. So immediately, you're going to have 21,710 households that won't have to worry about paying income tax. All right? Let's go forward. Where do we see the most robust income generation in our country? According to this, we have 31,475 households making between $20,000 and $40,000 a year. These households are generating $944,250,000. Now, for me, I'm starting at $30,000 a year. I want to go lower, but I'm going to give you a chance to let your income actually work for you before I start taking your income in another way. We could go, for the sake of being super generous, we're going to put the ceiling or the floor at $40,000. So let's do this math here real quick. This is why I'm not taking phone calls right now, because I want you to understand this. So we already had 21,710 households we discounted. We're going to now add 31,475 households to that. Let me just do my calculator here. All right. So 21,710 households plus 31,475. That's 53,185 households that we are immediately saying will not contribute to income tax. We do that calculation, and I wanted to cap it at 30. I wanted to put the floor at 30, well, 25 ideally, but I'm going to say 30 for now. Even though in the States, like, you go real low, you still have to pay income tax, even though you get refunds and stuff, etc. But I'm doing this a different way than in the States, all right? So that is about 1.3 billion dollars. All right? That we've immediately said out of the 5 billion we're not going to touch. And not touching that's going to protect 53,185 households. So if you're making below 40 grand in the Bahamas, in your household, we're not going to touch you. That's household. So you're going to have to file your income tax as a household. All right? Now, keep in mind, there's a couple of ways to go about this. It could hit you with a bill at the end of the year and try to collect your bill, or I could take it straight out of your salary. All right? Salary's easier, but then we're just going to go cap it at a certain personal income level. So again, my personal income level, I want to say 25. But for the sake of this, household-wise, we're going to say 40 grand, right? Which is a lot of money, but we can start touching. We can also look at it salary-wise, but they don't break it down by salary. But we assume at least two people per household. Let's go up. If we're capping at 30 grand, we got to look at what we're capturing here. Between $40,000 and $60,000, are 23,955 households. All right? So let's see who we're protecting. We're not touching you until you hit 30. So if you're over 30 individually, it's $60,000 threshold per household. Time to pay. All right? 53,185 plus 23,955 is 77,000. 140 households. All right? How much money are we not capturing here? If we looked at $1.3 billion, The people who make between $40,000 and $60,000 a household, that represents 23,955 households, as I said, collecting $1.2 billion. So immediately, we are protecting, yes, 77,000 households, 77,140 households, and we're excluding $2.5 billion. So again, I said there's 112,000 households, and we're going to take 77,000 households from that. That's going to leave us with 35,000 households paying income tax in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. If you're bringing in $60,000 per household, I'm going to have to say that between the two of you, you're bringing in at least $30,000 each. So we're going to leave you alone, right? But if you make over $30,000 each, time to kick in, right? And that's just where we're at. Now, this is, that leaves us with about $2.5 billion less. Let's look at this. Those making between $60,000 and $80,000 represent 12,405 households at $868 million. Those making between $80,000 and $100,000 represent 6,570 households. All right. Making $591 million. Those making $100,000 and over represent 10,530 households in the Bahamas, bringing in $1,158,300,000, not stated 6,120 households. So that could mean they make much, 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 much more. Could mean they make nothing. They didn't ascribe a dollar value to that. Now, we are able to look at a $2.5 billion pot of money. Unless we're doing something much more progressive, right? Which would start, and we can, but we're just going to do a simple exercise here today. Unless we're doing something much, much more progressive, which is to say, okay, if you're at 60 to 80,000, you're going to pay 7.5%. And if you're at 80,000 to 100,000, you're going to pay, let's say, 12%. Right? And the reporting would get weird. And so what you'd have to do is you'd have to have NIB help you deal with some of this and kind of double check it. And if you're making $100,000 and over, we're going to hit you with, say, 15%. You could do that. And then you get some different sort of math, which is probably not with those same numbers, but probably that same logic and methodology would have to prevail in order to make it more balanced. I know you're getting nervous now, right? I got to pay 15% on this $1 million? We'll see. All right. So what we can do, though, and you're going to have to pay, and this is going to benefit everybody, is go from 60,000 on up, and you could cap it at the rate in which you still think you're capturing most of that $2.5 billion. $60,000 on up, right? $2.5 billion. Let's go ahead and assign an income tax rate of 7.5%, all right, of that money. So what you're going to collect here is, well, let's do 10%. So you're going to collect $250 million if you collect 10%. So immediately every year, you know, you got $250 million coming in and there's income tax, and it's just on a certain segment of the society. That's 35,000 households kicking in a collective $250 million in income tax, and that can start you off cooking with gas. There's some other things we do. I don't believe in estate taxes. I don't believe in capital gains taxes. That's just kind of the, I'm dreaming I'm going to be really, really rich one day, part of me. Although I'm working toward that. But if we set an income tax at $250 million, we'll be cooking with gas. Let's go ahead and put in a flat corporate tax rate, and we got to look at the amount of money the corporate sector brings in. We can be sitting pretty good in terms of where we are in our revenue and our ability to afford programs. I'm open to critique on all this. I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back. Like I said, we probably should have had another show to go through it a bit more, but that's where I am.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them on 242-356-0249.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Thanks so much for joining us here on The Revolution on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We're talking about how we can implement an income tax structure. Corporate tax structure is a different animal. In my opinion, you're going to have to reconfigure the business license in order to be a corporate tax, and you're going to have to implement a nominal corporate tax on IBCs. Okay? Now, like I said, I'm open to critique. If you think it's a terrible plan, that's fine. But again, we're going to have to get there. All right? So we always have this argument that we're undertaxed, which, you know, you can look at that a couple of different ways. But the fact of the matter is that we're going to have to move on from where we are now. And we got to pull the trigger. All right? So we now have to enter discussions into it. We can't just say, well, one day, we're looking at it. We have to move on with this. All right. Now, you're going to say several things to me. You're going to say, well, Juan, I already pay for my kids to go to private school, and no one's paying for that. I'm not sending my kids to government school. I'm not a burden on the taxpayer. Well, now, you could, okay, the private schools are still subsidized by the government schools. All right. The vast, vast majority of them. So the taxes do go to help subsidize private schools. Under my system, though, the public school system would look dramatically different than it does now. So it would not look the same. They would have better facilities. There would be more schools, right? Less classroom crowding. I know I'm speaking magic here, right? I'm talking fantasy, right? No one's ever done this. This is brand new stuff where the public school system actually functions well. in a country that isn't massive, but I'm certain it can be done. All right. This person says, so we could be capturing a lot more, all right, and reducing the cost of living at the same time. It says, given the cost of living in the Bahamas, I would start at $60,000 or even higher just to ensure a decent standard of living. If public education and healthcare were of a decent standard, you could start lower. But until they come up to standard, people will continue to go private, and on $60,000 a year is tight. Great exercise, though. It is tight on $60,000 a year. It's tight. I'm not going to lie to you. Right? My household brings in more than $60,000 a year. It's tight. Right? But we're gonna get the cost of electricity down. All right? Down to 10 cents a kilowatt hour across the board, not just for the fuel charge. That's our goal here. We're gonna go ahead and get rid of customs duties or put them at no more than 5 to 7%. And we're going to reduce value-added tax. If you want to feel comfortable about it, you can leave it at 10. And we're going to have income taxes, a lower cost of living, a better standard of living, and capture enough revenue to make sure we're able to do that. All right. Let's see. Good day, Juan. I'm waiting to hear households with two kids. Will there be tax returns? People in the domestic work whose salary under 15K, but gratuity is over 40K. Yeah, I'm going to tax your gratuity with your salary. So you're going to pay taxes on all that. If you make it, you got to pay it, right? And don't try duck me. All right? If you're making it on the books, then you got to pay it. You could get deductions. That's fine. Particularly if you have dependents, if you are paying somebody else's salary for your household, these are things we could look at. How many children you have, these are things we could look at. But again, under what I'm looking at, you would be paying less for food, less for electricity, not paying for school. The public school system would be at a level to where if you go private, that's on you. All right? It's amazing that Bahamians are begging for income tax without first requiring this government to curb their borrowing and wasteful spending. Once that income tax door is open, an undisciplined government will raise taxes whenever they deem they need money. Be careful what you beg for. Well, again, we're going to have to get there. I agree with you, though. This is one. Everyone gets excited about the equity that can be had with an income tax system. Spoiler alert, a poorly crafted income tax system can be just as regressive. True. You could have a bad income tax system and still not have great outcomes. Again, a lot of countries in the Caribbean have income tax and they're not where we are. All right. It says gratuity is gratuity. You cannot and ought not tax an ex-gratia payment. Why not? Why? You earn it, eh? Okay. Now, if your boy just give you a couple of dollars, right? That's different. If you earned that on your job, I could need that little thing. The government could need a little thing. All right. It says, one, an extra tax should be charged to companies granted work permits, preferably a percentage of revenue. Yeah, there's lots of ways we could tax. I'm just talking income tax, though. It says, don't give these politicians any ideas about income tax. The more money you give them, the more they will find foolishness to spend it on. I prefer to keep my money in my possession. Their track record shows they cannot run anything properly. And that is, too, how a lot of people feel. I feel that way, right? I feel, look, if I'm getting value for money, I'll pay taxes, right? Everyone talks about, well, Japan, income tax is like 40-something. Yeah, man, I'll pay. I'll pay. If everything humming and clicking and running around here, I'll pay. I'm going to pay private school for my kids. The cost of living is inexpensive. Housing and everything is affordable. I'll pay. Says, Juan, my health insurance is $1,000 a month, and last year I spent $30,000 cash in medical bills along with having insurance. So until they fix these things, I don't want to pay out of my salary. $900 million was collected in VAT and still no improvements. And this is the thing. Anyone introducing an income tax can't just sit there and go, you know, promise, promise, promise. You're going to have to understand people are going to be very, very wary of what you do with this money. So you can't play crazy with it. You have to build hospitals. You have to build schools. You have to increase the efficacy of public education. You have to increase the efficacy of transport around here, right? If we had a really great public transport system that was safe and efficient and timely, then far fewer people would be buying cars, which would be a great thing because most of you, the vast, vast, vast majority of you are terrible drivers who should never be allowed behind the wheel of a motor vehicle. This says the argument that the government needs to be perfect before the rich can be taxed fairly is a delaying tactic. Yeah, you ain't gonna get no perfect government now. Perfect governments don't exist. Perfect countries don't exist. What you do want to see is you want to see fail-safes built into the spending process, the budgetary process, and we talked about that earlier. Parliament polices itself in this regard, and so you have to have people who are serious about this, right? So yes, fine. There's an external shock like a huge, huge hurricane. Yeah, although you should understand by now hurricanes are going to keep coming. There's a pandemic. Sure, you couldn't plan for that. Yeah, but we got to still maintain our track on where we're going. It says income tax will be another burden for the middle class. The poor can't pay and the rich won't pay. The rich got to pay. Now, you're going to have some uber rich who are going to get away. But if your income is being recorded, what of it is getting recorded? Then you have to pay on that. Juan, your plan sounds all well and good, but until we improve on our collection of taxes and become a more disciplined citizenry, I fear we will continue around the mulberry bush in trying to bring down the deficit. I'm going to say this, and maybe the devil will prove me to be a liar, but I think the Department of Inland Revenue is doing a good job. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's not getting captured, but their efficiency has increased over the past few years. They hit a roadblock with that pandemic. I ain't going to lie to you. But they seem to be not quite where they were in 2019, but they seem to be getting back on track. Juan, we the people did not consent to signing up for sustainable development goals. We were not asked. We have no say on which one should take priority. We have not been asked. It's difficult now to make the basis for the look at tax reformation, the fact that we are not achieving sustainable development goals. The UN should have zero say in our tax structure. We're a sovereign nation. Let's make our own decision that won't kill the middle class. Fine, we got to make our own decisions, but sustainable development goals are something we all sign on to. They are not just for fun. They help us to get loans that finance government spending, to take on infrastructure projects, etc. We're not doing this just for clout and to look good. We're doing it in order to make things easier for us. But I agree, we're sovereign. And as you can see, we are sovereign and we do what we want. And what we have not done is implement income tax. Juan, this is the week to verify for NIB unemployment assistance. When we tried to verify this morning, several of us were unable to gain access to NIB's portal. This will make it impossible for us to attain our assistance funding. Has the government stopped the program without reference to us? The government has not stopped. They're funding it through the end of the month. It says, hi, the Americans seem to be the smartest people on the planet. What a great line President Biden has. Shots in arms and money in pockets. Can Minnis borrow that one? He could borrow that one, sure. Juan, we all know the PLP plan to garner finances is to follow the leprechaun to the end of the rainbow and rob it of its pot of gold. Fairy tale politics 101. It says, I'm a PLP and Anton makes me sick. Oh, Lord. it says, good day, one stop. This is off topic. Oh, you asked about the elections. I answered that. In my reading of the Constitution, there's nothing that says the Prime Minister is going to delay an election in very specific circumstances, one being in a time of war. In terms of the emergency order, I don't see where he can do that. It says, increasing taxes without serious reform is wasting money. The public school system is not in a mess due to lack of money. It's in a mess because the actors involved refuse to make the necessary adjustments required to improve the system. Your talk, while well-intentioned, is fanciful thinking. Let's see some major reforms by government, transparency, and accountability, and then we can look at income taxes. I mean, I don't think it's fantasy. I think it's workable. I think other countries have done it. But I agree with you that we need reform. It says they already don't monitor businesses paying NIB. How will they monitor salaries? Well, again, Department of Inland Revenue needs to be resourced in order to do that. Juan, the challenge with raising the minimum wage is that it raises the cost of doing business, which in turn raises the price of goods. Once the cost of goods goes up, it will be more expensive to live. So the question is, will increasing the minimum wage in fact allow people to buy more, or will the increase in the price of goods offset or even outweigh the wage increase? It's a vicious circle. Well, I'll say this. When we implemented a minimum wage, people were crying out that it would harm the economy. The economy only grew. Maybe it retarded natural growth that would have taken place without that. when we increase the minimum wage, I say we euphemistically, those representing us increase the minimum wage. People said it's going to kill the economy, it's going to harm the economy. The economy only grew. Now, whenever it shrank, it wasn't because of minimum wage. It was because of external shocks. But there's no data to support that historically that implementing or increasing a minimum wage will harm the economy. None that I've seen. You may be able to present some. All right. That's going to go. I wish we had more time to do this. But we're fresh out of time. Z Live off the record with Shavargo Lang's up next. Thanks so much for tuning in. You guys have a great day and take care, Bahamas.